Welcome to the West Peak Sessions. This episode is brought to you by South Coast Hemp Foods. South Coast's delicious hemp seeds are grown in a sustainable way on a family-owned farm located in the beautiful southwest of Australia between Albany and Denmark. Brad and Alison are surfers who care about the environment. They spray no pesticides or herbicides on their hemp plants and use no plastics in their packaging. In fact, their hemp seed packaging is 100% compostable, and not just at commercial composting centres, they can even go straight into your backyard compost heap at home. Hemp seeds have a wide range of health benefits that can form an integral part of your everyday diet. They are rich in protein, omegas 3, 6 and 9, and a host of other essential nutrients that promote good health and well-being. South Coast hemp seeds are available in three varieties: lightly ground, which is perfect for any kind of cooking you want to do, from fish crumbles to muffins and cakes. The lightly roasted and lightly ground variety are delicious raw, so can be enjoyed as a snack or thrown into duckars and salads. And the hulled variety are the softest, making them perfect for smoothies. We have a special offer for West Peak Sessions listeners today. Go to southcoasthemp.com.au and enter the code THERIGHT, one word, to receive 10% off your order. That's southcoasthemp.com.au and enter the code THERIGHT. Okay, let's get started. My guest today is a man who achieved a career best fourth in the world in 1987, spent 7 years on the world surfing circuit, and nowadays lives the dream life of running a surf coaching business in beautiful Margaret River, Mr. Josh Parmentier. G'day, Josh. How you going, mate?
Good, mate.
Well, mate, we're going to go for a bit of a journey today back into the past. I'm going to take you all the way back to start off with, actually. Well, let's get started. Why don't you tell me, where were you born, mate, and where did you grow up?
I was born in Perth, West Oz.
Yep.
So, grew up at Medham's, just down the road from Triggs. So,
yep.
I was Medham's Triggs boy.
Yep.
So, it was a great little life growing up around that area.
Yeah. For sure. And so you obviously got into surfing pretty young. How did you get started into surfing?
Well, my parents weren't really ocean people, so it was more I was into swimming, into pool swimming and then into surf club. I was a clubby dick for a long time.
Righto.
So, we'll paddling boards and just, foamies. And so from there, I guess I just started, riding foamies and then started standing up and thought, this is pretty good fun. And, going down Mets and nicknamed Wankers. I grew up just pulling into little barrels at Wankers and just on my knees on foamies. And, just hung out riding foamies for many years before I got my first fibro. So
unreal.
I guess I was, 10 years old when I got into it on foamies. And then by age 12, I entered in a Scholastics. They had the Scholastics back then and got second and got selected in the state team to go and represent WA in the Scholastics. And from then on, it just sort of moved forward,
Unreal, mate. And so tell us about that first fiberglass board, mate. Do you remember it?
Oh, yeah. It was a bloody beauty, mate. It was 8 foot long and a single fin was about 2 foot. It was the biggest fin you've ever seen. I couldn't go over shallow sandbanks. Took me and my brother and I had to, my brother Brooke and myself had to carry the thing down. It was that heavy. So that was my first board, big, massive fiberglass mel. And I think I rode it once and I nosedived and the thing flew in the air and came down and the whole tail of it just went down my backbone and took all the meat off my backbone.
Oh.
I was like, stuff these fibro things. I'm back on the foamy. So another year back on the foamy before I got the confidence to get on my fibro again. My first fibro was just, I wish I still had it today. It was a ripper old beast. But, then I think my first real surfboard was definitely a Murray Smith.
Yep.
Mugger. I got in the Scholastics team on just an old piece of board.
Yeah.
And then Muzza picked me up and put me on his sort of, grommy team.
Yep.
And rode Murray Smith for a while. And, that's when I sort of yeah, took off and loved competing and got into it and went from there, I guess.
Awesome, mate. And let's talk about that Murray Smith team back in the day, mate. Who was on that team when you joined it?
Mate, I was that young. I remember Dave McCauley's brother, Noddy.
Yep.
He was one of the shapers and he was on the team. I forget if Benton Moran, I'm not sure if Benton rode Mother Smith. I see that you had Benton on the other week.
Oh, I did, yeah. That was a great yarn.
But, yeah, I mean, everyone had their go with Murray Smith. I think Wayne Jaggard.
Yep.
You know, there were some great surfers come out of West Oz, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Cunningham, all those sorts of guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. No, it was a good yarn with Benton the other day, going back over those days, and I was thinking we might have mentioned your name. I can't remember. And you know, Tommy Blaxall and Murray Smith were kind of the main guys that were making boards and had the team riders and all those names you just mentioned. And you know, Stewie Bedford Brown and all those guys back in the day, they were all kind of heroes of mine, looking up to all of you guys.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I had John Schmittenberg, Shindig.
Yep.
He was such a talented surfer. You know that lad. And there was a lot of talent. Wayne Jaggard, like I mentioned, Wayne just before, he was just, you know, next level.
Yep.
You know, you got Matty Branson.
Yeah.
You know, Bedford Brown. There was some really great talent come out of West Oz, you know.
There was, mate. And with Benton, we were saying this too, that that used to be the normal passage was from Perth down south and then onward from there. But nowadays, you sort of don't hear of as many surfers coming out of Perth. They're mainly just coming straight from down south. I mean, you know, guys like Jack Robbo and the guys that are getting on the tour and stuff like that. There's not many Perth surfers anymore, doesn't seem.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of Grommies up there at the moment, you know.
Yep.
Some really great little Grommies, but you know, I guess most of the crew, like Jacob Wilcox and Robbo, you know, Jack Robbo at the moment.
Yep.
They're sort of the main focus on the world tour.
Yeah.
From WA, and they're both local boys from down here. So
that's right. And we've got, you know, Kyle Walsh and Ollie Henry and, you know, that sort of next tier. They're all, though, seem to be coming from down your way.
Yeah. So there's a lot of talent coming out of the southwest now, you know, like, there's a lot more coaching around available than when we were kids. There was no coaching. You just had to do it, work it out yourself, you know. And
yep.
Guys like Mike McCaulis and Nick Shaw, you know, they took me under their wing and really looked after me from a really young age and took me around. So, you know, hanging out with those guys as people I looked up to as my role models, they were brilliant in my, you know, surfing career, you know, the start of my career, what got me into it. And,
yep.
You know, they were sort of not my coaches, but they were sort of people that just looked after me, took me under their wing and took me on, you know, trips down south and
awesome.
You know, took me surfing in bigger waves and scared the living pants off me.
And it was harder to get that exposure back in the day, wasn't it, coming from WA? I spoke about this with Dave McCauley on the podcast a couple of months back. You know, you had all the magazines over on the East Coast, Tracks and Surfing Life and all that, and we sort of didn't really have that going on as much in WA, so it was a bit harder to get that exposure, get your career going. Did you sort of find that?
Oh, yeah, it certainly was. Coming from West Oz is very difficult. It was like sort of, you know, the other end of the world sort of thing, you know, like...
Yeah.
So for us as West Aussies, we grew up sort of missing all that sort of hoo-ha over on the east. But
yep.
You know, that's why we sort of had to make big changes. If you wanted to chase the tour or chase your dreams, you had to sort of go over east a lot and spend a lot of time over there, sort of bunking down with mates at their mum and dad's houses, sleeping on the couches, in your cars.
Right.
So, you know, it was quite difficult for a young fella or a young girl, whatever, breaking into the world scene from West Oz.
Yeah, for sure. And
but
so you're...
I think we've done pretty well over here for the mountain. You know, guys like Tars Burrows,
yep.
You know, just number two in the world several times. So,
yeah.
You know, we got the resilience and I think we've got a bit of talent coming up.
Yeah, so for sure. We certainly do. Yeah, and so you mentioned that you kind of went from the Scholastics to the States. So were you part of a board riders club or did you sort of skip that step?
No, well, I was in Metam's members.
Righto.
Yeah, so that was my club. when I first joined, they didn't really want any juniors in the club. Yeah. They were just more of a, you know, opens club.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, the rules changed. If you wanted a club to go into the board riders battles, you had to have a couple of juniors. So they allowed a couple of juniors, Ross Fleming and myself.
Yeah.
Old Bear. Yeah. So we were allowed in the club, a little sort of special privilege. And then they let other juniors in after that, which is really great, you know, like Mel Norton, my brother Brooke. But it was a tight little group. There was sort of only four or five juniors in the club at ever one time.
Yep.
But, yeah, Medham's Members was my club. So I loved it, you know. I loved it, you know, hanging out with the older boys, going on surf trips everywhere. Medham's Members used to have a yearly thing with Kalbarri board riders.
Right.
Go up Kalbarri every winter on a bus. And, oh, my God, that was so much fun. They were great memories going on the bus. And,
yeah.
With all the boys and, you know.
A lot of partying back in those days, I would imagine.
Yeah, mate, yeah, it was sort of a little bit different. It wasn't quite as professional back then, but, it was a good time, you know.
Yeah, yep. And so state titles, I know you won a few, but I think if I've got the timing right, that was after your time on the World Tour. Is that right?
Exactly. So I left in 80, finished school and went straight to the World Junior titles in Puerto Rico in 87.
Wow.
And then after the World titles, I got fourth in the world and sort of then was picked up by some more, by Billabong, and they became a major sponsor, and I went and lived in America with them for a year.
Wow.
Doing the PSAA over there. I didn't do any good. It was all small wave crap. It was quite difficult, but anyway. Yep. So I lived in America, and then I got on the World Tour during the 1988.
Yep.
And just went from there, sort of thing, traveling around the world for the next sort of, 7 years?
Yeah, yep, 7 by my calculation. Yeah, that's right.
It would be about 7, I guess.
Yeah, and tell us about the tour back then, mate. That's, you know, a very, very different tour from what it was like today. You've already sort of indicated that you're kind of scratching out a living. What was it like, mate, doing that tour back at that time, 1988?
Mate, it was epic. It was unreal, you know, like everyone, you know, I guess it was called the ASP, not the WSL.
Yep.
It was called ASP, and there was no top 34. Top 40, it was just the whole world. So they had the top 30 back then.
Yep.
And anyone that wasn't in the top 30 had to go through trials.
Yep.
To get into the main event. So we used to just, all the grommets from around Australia, we'd stick together, you know, like Matt Branson, Matt Hoy, Nicky Wood, Jason Buttonshaw, you know, so we'd just all hang together and stick fat. And when you didn't have money, you'd borrow money.
Yep.
And then when you win some money, you'd have to pay them back. So it was all sort of, yeah. So, you're living on the, you know, bones of your butt. But it was unreal. Like, so, you know, when we go to Europe, all the boys, we used to, all the Aussie boys would sleep in the competition site in a big tent in the competitors area. So we couldn't afford accommodation like Tommy Carroll and Barton Lynch and all the boys in there in big 5-star accommodation.
The rock stars.
Across the road. There's us boys, grommets, living in the competitors' tent in our board bags. And eating cans of lentils and chickpeas. And, you know, and the only way we'd heat them up is in the sun before we went for a surf in the Arby and let the Bay Marie warm her up and come in. And that was... It was a damn good time, so I don't think you'd be able to do that now at the WSL. You wouldn't be able to sleep in your board bag in the bed.
No, and you wouldn't need to either. You'd probably, you know, even if you are kind of low down in the rankings, you're probably still looked after a bit more than that, I would imagine.
Yeah, you would have. But, I mean, our sponsors did their best, you know, with what they had at the time. And, you know, some countries, you'd go to Japan and they'd really look after you, the West suit mobs.
Yep.
From Japan would really look after you. So there was, you know, America would look after you when you were, you know, in America. So there's some really good places that you went that you would get looked after, but then some places you're definitely on your own, you know.
Yeah. Unreal,
yeah,
mate.
It was mint, you know, like you'd rock up at Bordeaux Airport and nothing, with just like, you know, about six, seven surfboards each. There was four of you in a car, so there was sort of, you know, 28, 30 surfboards on top of the roof of the car and you'd strap the whole thing down, you'd cave in the roof. I don't know how many screws we caved in on motor cars, fire motor cars. It was just ridiculous. We got through it, mate, and we had a ball, you know. You weren't earning a lot of money, so, you know, you're ringing back mum and dad, mum, I need another hundred, you know. but it was good fun, mate. It was fun.
That's
memory,
awesome.
You know.
That's unreal. And so at that time, I mean, you would have jumped straight on tour with, what, Tom Carroll, Tom Curran, Ockey was probably there. You mentioned Barton and Tom before. What was that like, mate? Was it a bit? We were a bit sort of starstruck coming up against those guys in heats.
Oh, fully, mate. You know, like, you know, I was always, because, like I said, you had to go through trials to get into the main event to go against the top 30.
Yep.
So I'd always have, because I was outside the top 30 all the time, I'd always have to compete in the trials and get through. And if I got through into the main event, I was always sort of the worst seed. You know, I was always end up with the world champion every time. I'd get Tommy Carroll, Tommy Karen, Bart Lynch, Derek Ho, and then eventually Kelly Slater come on the scene. I was against him all the time and just getting smashed.
Yeah.
I was useless. I was like a crab, you know. Like,
well, there's no shame in that, because Kelly was smashing everyone at that time, mate. This, you know.
I know. One time I remember surfing against Kelly in a man-on-man in Biarritz. Don't know what year, probably 1990 or something like that. And I had a broken arm just after Mark Sainsby died.
Right.
Yeah, I broke a finger, actually. He had his surfboard and I punched it and hit the spring with my knuckle, pushed the knuckle right back. So that was it, and I was in a cast. And then I had Kelly Slater in my first heat.
Yeah.
And, mate, he got straight out of the bat, he got a 10, big aerials down the line, big aerial, then another 10. I came out of the water with 2 ones. Just felt like such a crab. I took my, you know, jersey off and just screwed it up and walked up the beach sideways like a crab. I was just so embarrassing, mate. But those sorts of memories stick with you. And
yeah,
I'm getting flogged by all those top surfers. And, you know, the biggest probably memory is surfing a heat with Tommy Curran out really big margies when it was like, I don't know, 15 foot. I think they called it the Thriller back then.
Yeah.
And I was having the heat of my life. You know, I was actually beating Curran about 30 seconds to go, 10 seconds to go. This massive set come through. He had priority and catches it. And I had to look at him, just go past and he rode it all the way to the river mouth.
Wow.
And stepped off on the beach at river mouth, gets a 10, overtakes me, I'm out again.
Oh, shit.
So, shit like that. Was yeah. Beautiful.
But you did win, you won at Margaret River 4 times. That was the Margaret River Classic, so that wasn't actually an ASP event, is that right?
That's right, that's correct. It was only the Margaret River Classic, so it just opened to West Aussies and Australian, Australian boys that wanted to come over for it. So, yeah, won it 4 times, but
yeah.
It's a great event, you know, really great local event, that one.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Did you win any ASP events?
No, third in Japan was my best.
Right.
So I was knocked out by Tommy Carroll.
Yeah.
So that was my best ever result, was a third in the Maui Marui Pro.
Yeah.
Habara Beach.
Unreal.
Japan. Yeah, so that was my best result.
Yep.
So, yeah, I never really never made a final. I was lucky to get to the semis, actually. That was my, you know, claim to fame.
Yeah. Well, I remember your name very well, mate. You were getting a lot of exposure. There was obviously a lot of talk about your talent and your ability. You just weren't sort of translating that necessarily into results. Do you put that down to anything in particular?
Well, mate, I never really had, I was a surfer with not, I didn't have natural ability. You know, put it that way. When you come up to guys like Slater and Curran and Carroll, Nicky Woods, they just had absolute natural ability. They were just gifted to be surfers, you know. I was one that had to work at it. And like every sport that I was involved in, I had to really train it. I was never really a gifted sportsman. I had to just work and train and really focus to get where I wanted to get. And that was what I had to do, you know.
It's interesting hearing you say that because I've had Jake Patterson on the podcast in the past, and he essentially said exactly the same thing. And I've sort of been wondering how much of that is kind of typical West Aussie humility, or how much of that really is true. I think if we compare you and Jake to your average surfer, you have an extraordinary amount of talent. But I suppose when you're comparing yourself with people like Kelly Slater and Tom Curran, maybe that's where the benchmark is that you're setting yourself against.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, when you're at that sort of level, breaking into the professional ranks, you've got to set your sights on, trying to get Martin Potter and Kelly and Curran and Carroll and Lynch and Derek Ho, all the Garcia. That's who you're looking at. So you're mixing it with them, and that by mixing it with them, it lifts your level. It brings you up. It really competing against the best in the world definitely improves your surfing and, your mindset.
Yep.
So when you come back to WA and you go in a state round, you do really well. You do well back in WA because you've gone against the best. You know what it sort of takes.
Yep.
But then, you get bitten again, you go back on the world tour and holy cow, here we go.
So, this would explain why you came off tour and won four state titles in a row.
Yeah, that's right. I would have finished in '94, and I sort of realised, mate, I was only getting to 45th in the world. Yep. I was finding it hard to get into the top 40, and then I thought I'm going to go home and start a surf school. I was home here, and there was a state round, so I had all that knowledge of surfing against the best in the world for many years, and that just was found it easy to surf in the state rounds, local titles, So, it was just all that knowledge I'd gained from traveling around the world and surfing against the world's best.
Yeah, came home and smashed them.
By them and beaten by them all the time. You knew what hunger it took to actually win,
Unreal. And the idea for the surf school, did it just kind of come to you, or what inspired that?
Well, mate, to be honest, I had no skills. The only skill I had was the ocean. When I come back, I was I guess a lot of pro surfers, when they drop out and they didn't quite make it to what their, long-term goals were, get in the top 10, and try and be world champion, after so many years of trying, you realise I don't have that natural ability. I'm not going to make that. I'm just going to sit around at the back of the field all the rest of my life. Let's go home and, look at sort of starting a surf school and put some of this knowledge of the ocean I've learned and the froth I have about surfing into the kids of WA. And that's how it came about. I just started the surf school and, went from there.
Unreal. And it's going really well. I'll ask you a bit more about that in a moment. I just want to stay on that sort of coming to the end of your pro career there. Were you hard on yourself for not achieving the results that you wanted? Like you mentioned top 10 as though that was a goal. You never quite made it. Did you find that hard to swallow?
Yeah, definitely, mate. It was a very big decision to sort of just switch off and say I'm not going to do it anymore, I felt like I was letting everyone down, all my sponsors. And it was definitely a hard pill to swallow to actually give it up and that life of hanging out with all the boys and, traveling around the world. Surfing every place in the world, it was just sensational to then realising I've got to actually work here.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? I've got no skills. All I got is ocean skills.
Yeah.
So that's all I could do is think, okay, there's no surf schools down here, so let's try and put and focus my energy and my knowledge back into the youth of WA. And that's how it came about.
Yeah, unreal. And just quickly, on the tour side of things, there was a lot of partying back then. It was a pretty notorious party tour. Did that play into, were you a bit of a partier on that tour, and do you reckon that had any impact on your results?
Guaranteed, mate. I was a bit of, we were all pretty naughty.
Yeah.
hanging out with Rod Kerr, the box, and all the boys, you know, we just sort of, you know, and we're all living in each other's pockets too.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, Ross Clark Jones, Tony Ray, you know, they were guys that took me under the wing, and I travelled with those guys a lot, you know, staying with them in Hawaii, and they really pushed me to the next level in big ways.
Yep.
Yeah, so I did leave with, you know, sort of a lump in my throat, as say, and not reaching my full potential, what I'd hope. But, you know, I've dealt with that over the years and sort of looked back and gone, you know, well, I did okay. You know, I'm happy with it now and happy with where I'm at. And, I love putting time into you know, teaching kids surfing, really.
Yeah, and the business is going well. And so just that moment when you give up and you're trying to figure out what to do next, is that kind of a bit of a lonely, scary kind of a feeling?
Yeah, mate. I'd say a lot. You know, guys like Jason Buttonshaw, Nicky Woods, he retired too, and he was destined to be world champ. You know, a lot of guys didn't make it where they probably should have. So,
yep.
It does play on your mind, and it's hard to deal with.
Yep.
So, but you just got to get over it. You know what I mean? Move on. And look forward, really.
Yeah, and that new school coming on, Kelly Slater, essentially. I mean, there was half a dozen or more surfers like Nicky that you're saying there that, you know, were kind of earmarked as these guys are going to go a long way. And then, you know, Kelly and his cohorts, the so-called momentum generation, came along and just completely changed surfing. And so there's a few guys that never reached their potential because of the impact of that group of surfers and largely of Kelly, right? Is that true?
Yes. Dead true. But, you know, then there's guys, you look at guys like Matt Archibald from America.
Yep.
He was just a red-hot aerialist, you know, and out climbing. He never got there either, you know. So you got to look back and sort of take it into context. You know, there was a lot of guys out there with way more natural ability than me that didn't make it either, you know, that would have had to go home and swallow that same pill and be like, what am I going to do now, you know. So,
yep.
I kind of wasn't at that level of ability, you know. So I could sort of probably deal with it a little bit easier, you know. I didn't have that coverage like Nicky and, you know, Matt Archibald. I was nowhere near that level naturally. So I was probably able to deal with it a little bit easier at home. And I love being home. I love being in Margaret River. And I love this place here.
Yeah. And four state titles in a row doesn't hurt. You got to experience the winning feeling for a bit longer and then kicked off your surf school. So was it a pretty smooth transition to getting the surf school up and running, or did you do it tough for a little while?
Yeah, I did it tough. You know, I just started in a little Mitsubishi ute with eight surfboards and just, you know, looking after backpackers and stuff like that. And then I went in with went in partnership with Lindsay Thompson from Beach Life, a local legend family, the Thompson family.
Yeah.
So myself and Lindsay started a surf school together down here. That would have been probably 95. And then I think it was 96, the cliff collapse at Gracetown tragically took Tomo's life.
Yeah.
And I was meant to be there. We were meant to be coaching Quamut Primary and Mark River Primary, and I had a state championship up in Perth. So I took off. I said to Lindsay, I can't be there. I've got a state round, and I think Dave Inglett filled in for me actually. And anyway, we're up at the state round, and then we hear on the wireless on the ABC there's a cliff collapse at Gracetown, and tragically that was where Lindsay and, you know, a lot. I think eight other people lost their lives.
Yeah, teachers and students,
And the FG students and headmaster from Climate Primary, Mr. Bremner. So it was quite, that was quite traumatic, you know. And then I was left wondering, where are we going to go from here? What's my next step? My whole life had been crushed again, you know, losing my partner. And so that's when I sort of went, well, I just start up my own surf school. You know, and go my own way, and that's how my surf school started. You know, but and move forward from there from 96.
Wow. What a strange feeling, eh, thinking that you could have very easily been standing on that beach when that happened.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's, hopefully I would have been with Dave Ingler. He was actually out the water with the kids, and he has got some horrific memories of that, looking back. And, you know, so I could have been there, but I wasn't. So,
yep.
But that was a very sad moment in our life there.
Yeah.
Like that, you know.
Yeah, for sure. A little old Gracetown. I mean, I spoke with Laura McCauley, one of the earlier episodes of the podcast about some of the tragedy that's unfolded in that town with the cliffs and some shark attacks. And little did I know that, a year or so later, another tragedy in the form of her brother, Jack. It's a little community that seems to cop it every now and again, but it's also a community that's really close-knit, hey, and everybody kind of sticks together and supports each other.
Yeah, that's the best thing about living in a smaller community, you know. Like, everyone, when a tragedy does happen, they come together and everyone's got everyone's back, which is great. And, you know, it was really sad to lose Jack Dog. He was a great kid. I coached him as a little kid, you know, through school programs. And Bronnie too. I coached Bronnie McCauley, only when she was like 8, 9, 10, 12 years old through primary school programs. And, she was always a little go-getter then, and
that
was Jack Dog. But, unfortunately we lost Jack this year. And, hopefully the McCauleys are, somehow trying to get through this moment,
Yeah, that's right, mate. Shout out to Dave and Lorraine and the girls. Yep. We're thinking of you. Yeah, tough times, and it's probably worth touching on. I don't know a lot of the detail, but I think depression had something to do with this, and something that's pretty prominent in our society, unfortunately. And I don't know what I can say about it other than there is help out there for people who are suffering, and also keep your eyes on the people around you, your family and your mates, and if you see any signs, reach out. The old "Are you okay?"
Yeah, mate, that's what there is help out there. I mean, it's a hard one when you're in that dark place to sort of reach out, but I think if you're willing to reach out, you will get through it. Mental health is a huge issue at the moment. All around the world, I guess, just reach out, and that's the first step, is reaching out to a mate.
Yep.
And then you can get the ball rolling, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's right. Good on you, mate. Yes. So on a lighter note, the business is going well. You've been at it for, 25 years or more now?
Yeah, mate. Yeah. Started up in, started my own business in 96. So I don't know, what's that, 26 years?
Yeah. Unreal.
It's going really well. I mean, we started in Margaret River, of course, and then, we bounced out to Bunbury, Mandra. We do all the southwest country towns for many years, and then my brother Brooke and myself realised, we need to sort of get more work, through winter months. So we took to the road and drove to Broome and started a surf school in Broome. It would have been probably 97.
We were up there,
97, 98, I'm thinking, and then ran the surf school up there for 15 years, teaching all the little Aboriginal kids, little black fellows and white fellows. So we had a ball going up there in winter and teaching all the kids. It was just so much different to Margaret River.
Yeah, that's fantastic, mate. And Broome's a town that most people don't really associate with surf.
No, there's not much there. In the season we went up there, but it's knee height with waist high waves in the wet season, which is our winter.
Yep.
The wet season. So you do get the odd little dribbler coming through, big enough to learn to surf. It was a really good, easy beach to teach kids learn to surf.
And unreal.
I never had that opportunity up there. So once we got into the schools, we would end up doing like 700 kids a week up there. It was just ridiculous.
That's brilliant.
It took a long time to build and get the school programs running, but once we did, they ran every kid from grade 3 to year 12.
Yep.
So we end up with some great relationships and mates out of the kids up there. So you teach them from grade 3, and by the year 12, they, you'd seen them every year. They're looking forward to you coming back, and then they would leave school and we're still going there, you know what I mean? We're still coming up. So they were unreal to hang out with the mobs up there, like the Nyul Nyul mob and the Bardi mob, you know. And we'd bring all the little Aboriginal kids from out east, you know, from like Docker River, out desert mob, you know.
Bring them
into Broome, they put them in the camp school and teach kids that had never seen the ocean, you know, like yeah, they'd never, when they'd rock up, they'd just look at the ocean and go, oh, wow, it's big.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we had so much fun teaching the little Indigenous kids. And
what a buzz.
From all over up the northwest, you know, the Kimberleys, they were coming everywhere, you know.
So, that's unreal. And yeah. So, and the focus has been on kids, but do you coach adults as well?
Yeah, mate, yep. We coach everyone, corporate groups, sporting groups, backpackers. So, yeah.
Brilliant.
We teach everyone. So, the best, but our main focus now is schools.
Yep.
Where, you know, because they're so consistent with the business. So, but, you know, we still have time to look after, you know, as many people as we can.
Yeah, awesome. And Brooke's still involved, is he?
No, my brother Brooke, he is a real estate agent down here.
Yep.
Yeah, he's killing the pig at the moment.
He's doing all right. He actually he sold my brother's place in Margaret River a couple of years back.
Yeah, mate, he's doing really well. So business is booming for him. So, yeah, good luck to him. You know, good luck to him. He's doing really well.
Good on him. Unreal, mate. So, and what about surfing? Do you have much time to get in the water? Are you busy? You're busy with your school. Do you have a chance to get out and have a paddle? Or
it's funny you say that. I don't get out nowhere near as much anymore because, you know, you're in the water coaching, you're down the beach every day.
Yeah.
I've got a canoe, kayak and surfboard business for the Mart River. So you're always in the sun and down the beach every day. And by the time you finish, you're just exhausted. The wind, sun, the salt. I just go home totally exhausted.
And, you know,
so I kind of miss that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't get in the water as much anymore.
Yeah. Do you have kids of your own?
No, which is, you know, my wife and I, my wife Sarah and I have never been fortunate to have kids, but kind of good in a way. We look at it, you know, as a positive that I can put all my focus into the kids down the beach and I don't have to come home and deal with mine at home.
Yeah, so, you've got hundreds of kids.
got hundreds of kids, so I can put all my effort into those kids and everything I've got, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And what about the WSL, mate? Do you still follow professional surfing as a spectator?
Yeah, mate, I love it. I love watching it on, you know, WSL on the Foxtel. I don't really enjoy going down to the site and watching it live. It's sort of a bit too much for me. But I love watching it at home on the TV, you know. It's got all the replays and the photos, you know.
Yeah.
I love that. I do still really love watching surfing.
Yep.
I'll go down and watch the odd heat, especially if it's a West Aussie in there, like Bronte and Jack and Jacob. I'll go down and watch their heats. And,
yeah.
But other than that, mate, I sort of stick it home and watch them from here and tape all because I'll be maybe coaching, so I might miss it and just come home and watch it at night, you know.
Yeah, unreal. And what have you made of this season so far?
Well, it's been a very difficult season for them all, I guess. COVID coming around, but No, they're doing a good job at WSL trying to keep it all going and keeping the business up and running.
Yep. They sure are. What do you think seeing Rotto on tour again, eh? That was a bit of a blast from the past.
Yeah, seeing the boys at Rotto, you know, that was really good. I mean, they got fairly good Stricklands. Stricklands can turn it on, you know, that left.
Yeah.
It is fickle. It is hard to get on, but they seem to pick the eyes out of it and got pretty decent waves.
They did. They made it look the best I've seen it.
I've had great sessions out there over the years, you know, that left, you know, and it's just, you go, it's got to be 6 foot, you know, not much bigger, but perfect when it's 4 to 6 foot, you know. And
that's right.
It's a late wave when it's on, you know.
Yeah. Did you ever surf an event out there?
Australian titles.
Yep.
Plenty of state titles. So,
yep.
And, you know, surfed it really big in state titles, like 10 foot big, you know, the left's big fat left, but the right becomes sort of more like, I guess, semi-Halieva sort of looking.
Yep.
Thing with the bowl, end bowl section.
Yep.
But yeah, mate, I've had plenty of competitions out there. I love the island, you know.
Yeah.
Wadjimup Island. So,
yep.
It's a pretty special place.
It is a very special place indeed. There's a lot of big Noah's Ark swimming around the back of it too, though, that are always on your mind when you're out there.
Yeah, well, funny, one Australian title, there was a big 5 metre great G-dub, big white around the corner, next bay around, and they were still running the Australian titles. All the East Coasters were popping themselves on their undies though, because it was fairly solid, and they're out the back thinking, holy shit, there was a dead whale around the corner.
Oh, shit.
I think the army blew it up and just blew blubber everywhere. It was just like huge explosion.
Oh, mate, it gets rid of it quick, but you don't want to avoid the place for a couple of weeks after that, eh?
Yeah, so there's a couple of bays around from Strico's, he just did his job and stayed there cleaning up the ocean and then never came around and harassed us at Strico's.
So yeah, righto. I got a mate that refuses to go over to Rotto anymore after he was paddling back to his boat. I think it was Chicken Reef or Strico's or somewhere around there, and big G-dub went underneath him and he shit himself and said, I'm not surfing there anymore.
it's the ocean there everywhere around the world. And,
that's right.
You know, most of the time, mate, they're cool, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just the odd mistake they make, and if you're unfortunate to be there when they make that little mistake, come up and have a sniff.
Yeah.
That's all it takes is to have a sniff and you're in a bit of trouble. But
yeah.
Put that out of your mind, and you know you're in their domain, and just put out positive vibes, man. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we trialled the smart drumline thing. I don't know if you were close to that at all. I know Paul Paddo was. He and I were sort of part of a bit of a group around that because, you know, we sort of, I guess the thinking is we like the idea of having some sort of protection for surfers, but we especially like the idea of that being non-lethal to the sharks. So that was kind of the idea of the drumline, or the smart drumline, I should say. But the whole thing got scrapped, the government saying that they didn't catch enough great whites, which is probably fair enough. But then the flip side of that is there's an allegation there that they were intentionally using the wrong kind of bait. I know that's a pretty pretty big allegation, so I'll kind of preface that by saying I'm not sure how true that is. But, supposedly had they been using tuna heads, they would have caught more of them. And, the theory being they didn't want to spend state government money on these very expensive drum lines, so they used something else and didn't get the results. I don't know if that's true, but it's interesting.
Yeah, they were using salmon, so I can't see why, anything different, why salmon's so much different to tuna heads, but, they caught, I think maybe one or two. That's all they caught in the 2 or 3 year trial.
Yep.
But I'm not sure if that was the case. It could have been. I don't really know what white sharks like really eating the most. You know, I think they're after big blubbery, dead carcasses, whales, an easy feed. Seals. You put a fish on the line. I guess that's not their top priority. But I don't know, mate. It's a hard one.
It is a hard one. Yeah, so I guess the focus now will be on catching and tagging. But that seems a difficult battle. You can't tag them all, right?
It's pretty hard to tag them all, But I guess that's the only way is tag them, and then hopefully, the system's in place. They'll pick up the tag ones that are coming past and notify.
Yep.
Get off some alarms so people can make the decision to come in.
Yep.
And hopefully that will save a few lives, because you don't want to hurt the shark, of course. That's their domain, and they're a lovely beast. They're a beast.
Yeah.
But you got to respect them, and, they've been there for millions of years. So they're a top predator, and they deserve to live too, I guess.
They do. They're an essential part of the ecosystem. Absolutely. No, I agree. Anyway, we deviated slightly.
You've got to have sharks in the ocean.
We
get asked every day, is there any, when we're teaching, is there any shark in the ocean? And I say, what do you mean? There's hundreds. Is there a shark here today? There's hundreds out there. Don't worry about sharks. That's the least you worry. Rips kill way more people in Australia than a shark does. You know what? We may have, I don't know the exact figures, but I'd say there'd be 30 people in Australia drowned to rips a year, easy.
Yep.
And maybe one or two to sharks, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a no-brainer that ocean conditions, rips, and all that is a bigger killer than marine life, you know. So
yeah, for sure.
But that's my main education, is trying to teach our clients ocean awareness, surf safety.
That's great.
Put out of your mind, you want to go in the ocean, okay, you're entering a domain that's not yours.
Yep.
It's the ocean. It's where sharks live. So you take that on board. But you've got to learn the ocean. That's going to kill most people before a shark, you know.
Yeah.
So
yep.
People have got to get that thing of being eaten alive, you know. Drowning, you're dead. Eaten by a shark. I'd rather get eaten by a shark. At least you make the head, you know, the newspaper. So, you know, you die a bit of a legend, but and the roads down here, people die in motor car accidents.
Exactly.
You know, sort of look at the big picture and, go, well, there's a lot more dangerous things.
Yeah.
Out there than going surfing and worrying about sharks. You know?
Yeah, for sure. And so you touched on the ocean safety side of things. I like hearing you say that, because I don't know a lot about the surf coaching that goes on in WA or in Australia at large. Is there coaching going on, in your opinion, or that you're aware of, that doesn't focus on that and just teaches you how to paddle and stand up on a surfboard?
I'm not sure about other surf schools. I've never really gone and sat in on other surf schools, but I'm quite sure that would be a huge part of every surf school's focus, is educating their clients on, you know, what they're, and preparing them mentally what they're about to face out there, you know, like types of rips that are flowing, gutters, you know, inside gutters, you know, gutters with big permanent rips gushing out at the end of the beaches, being able to identify those sorts of things, giving people something to focus on, like a landmark, so you know where you are in the ocean the whole time, and not just sort of out there willy-nilly floating around at the mercy of the ocean, because she will destroy you. You know, we're just a grain in the sand compared to that Mother Nature out there. She's way more powerful than anything. We're just, you know, minuscule. She would just take our lives. She'd love to take our lives, you know.
Yeah.
She's the strongest thing.
She's taken many. Yeah, that's right. And so to run a surf school in WA, you have to be affiliated with Surfing WA. Is that right?
You can be Surfing WA or ASI.
Yep.
There's another affiliation, another group, but I'm with Surfing Australia.
Yep.
Yes, and under the umbrella of Surfing Western Australia. So I just stick with those guys. They're all my good mates over years of surfing for WA.
Yep.
So yeah, I stick to Surfing Australia and Surfing WA, mate.
Right. And so do they give some sort of guidance? Like there's certain boxes you have to tick in what you're teaching people?
Yeah, there is a structure. You know, they sort of, because we've been around so long, they just let myself run my own programs, and of course, you know, because private business, but under their umbrella. You know, when you go and do your course, they teach you how to set out a program. You know, a lesson plan.
Yep.
And then, you know, and what you should be teaching them, you know what I mean? Basic safety, ocean awareness, basic surf safety, that sort of stuff. And as you get, as you do your years of coaching, you really pick up your lesson plans, and you got to change it from day to day. You've got different conditions. One day you might have 15-foot howling nor'west, you got to change your, be fully mobile. Our surf school's fully mobile down here.
Yep.
As we've got to be, because it's such strong, powerful ocean.
Yeah.
So we're fully mobile, and we just sort of change beaches subject to the kids' age, their level of ability, the ocean conditions that we're given.
Yep.
And then just sort of switch it around. You know, like talk to the, if you've got grade threes, fours, fives, you've got to talk on a real basic level.
Yep.
I find teaching them quick, fast, you know, just, you know, sort of harbour on sort of rips and all the safety for too long. Otherwise, you just lose their brains doesn't retain it. You can see you're losing them. They're digging holes, looking at butterflies, whatever. You know, okay, I've lost them. Let's move on. So quick learning, and then get back to maybe teaching one rip, go on to the next, get back to the next rip. So you've got to be really fast in teaching those younger kids. Just keep it real quick learning, and then you know, as you get into a high school students, you can be a bit more thorough.
Yep.
So yeah, mate, it's just a matter of, you know, dealing with what age group, what level of abilities you've got, and then go from there, structure your plan around that, you know, when you're at the beach.
Yeah, unreal. Well, I suppose I should say, if anyone's listening to this and taking an interest in what you've got to offer, you've got your name on the door, right? It's Josh Parmentier's Surf Academy is the name of the business.
Yes, mate, that's it. I just named it after myself, I guess. I don't know why. I read a book. What was it? I forget his. Oh my God! big businessman. What's his name? Anyway, I've had a mental blank, mate.
It's all right.
Yeah, getting old age, bro. I just remembered it. There it is. I knew it was there. Dick Smith.
Oh yeah.
And
yep.
He said, you know, if you're going to call your business your own name, you've got to be your word. Is what I remember. And so that's the biggest thing. Is
nice.
It was a hard decision what to call a business when you're starting, and I said, oh, well, okay, I'll run with his ideas.
Yeah.
My word, and when I say I'm going to be there, I'm there, you know. So,
unreal. Oh, you had a profile. We all knew who you were at that time as well, so I think that was a really smart move.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of running with, I guess, you know, in WA, because that's where we're sort of, you know, we're putting it out to Western Australian schools and West Aussie kids. So that's why I used my name, and
good on you. I think that's great. Good on you, mate. Well, look, I've got two more things I want to ask you. The first one is for back on the WSL for this year. What do you think about Trestles as a venue for the finals? Is that a good idea or is that a mistake?
Well, it is a very high performance wave, so you know they get good wave. It does get good there, you know, good fun. And it is a high-performance wave, so I guess it's not a real bad decision. Better than having it at the swimming pool at Kelly Slater's pool.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have seen it, you know, at a big, heavy wave.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, maybe Piper or, you know, Tahiti, Fiji, you know. But anyway, you know, that's not our decision. But so sort of gone with that and running with that. And you've got to accept it. Hopefully it works for them.
What about, so when I had Jake Paddo on the podcast at the start of the season, he was talking about, you know, the thing that he can see happening that's, you know, the potential heartbreaker is you've got a guy that's on an absolute tear all season and he would have won the crown and then he loses at Trestles. We're seeing that right now, aren't we, with Gabriel Medina. He's just on an absolute tear. If it was the old school, you know, or not old school, last year and every other year of professional surfing, he would have pretty much had the title in the bag by now, if not already had it. And that potential scenario could be playing out in front of us where he might lose it to Philippe Toledo or someone else who just hasn't been having anywhere near the kind of year that he's been having. What does that, you know, what does that make you feel? Does that feel kind of wrong?
I guess, but, you know, in these strange times with this, all this COVID, and they've got to mix it up and think outside the box. I guess that's what they're trying to do.
Yep.
I think it's a good, I think it's quite an exciting concept.
Yeah.
Top five going down to the wire and not sort of leaving it, you know, because the title would already be decided by now, you know, with the old Brazo already winning it, taking it out, Medina. But it sort of leaves it open and leaves it exciting right to the last heat, you know.
In a
way, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that, you know, and seeing how this does play out. I don't know what the professionals think of it on the World Tour at the moment, but...
Mm.
You know, strange times after strange sort of things. So
they're
thinking outside the box and trying to just make it keep happening and keep it alive, keep surfing alive and exciting. And I think it will be quite an exciting event going down to the last five and the last heat of the year deciding the world champion. You know, so in my eyes, I'm going to really enjoy it.
Yeah, good on you. Yeah, me too. I agree.
Aussie comes up and just smashes Medina and we get an Aussie world champion and we weren't expecting it.
So yeah, that's right. Well, it looks like all eyes on the rookie, Morgan Sibilic, eh?
Oh, mate. That would be great. So imagine that.
What a fairy tale.
But that would be a fairy tale to see young Sibilic come up. But I guess he's still got a couple of events to go, so he's just got to keep his head down and keep focus and not lose, what he's there to do.
That's it. Get into that top five and you're in it with as good a chance as anyone, eh?
That's right, mate. As long as you make that top five, you've got a good chance, to get the world title. So it's going to keep it exciting and keep it real right to the last heat. So
for sure. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I agree with you. I think it is an exciting concept. I welcome the concept. I've been a little bit vocal on this podcast that I don't think Trestles is the right venue. I think Hawaii should be the place that we decide a world champion. It's a little bit like the footy grand final at the MCG debate that kind of rages around this country every sort of September. But, for me, that would have been the right venue. But I do like the concept and I'm also looking forward to it.
Oh, I'm with you too. I'd love it to be in a heavy water wave, like Sunset, Pipe, whatever.
Yeah.
Fiji, Chopu, that would be, have the top five there going down for a world title in, 10 to 12 foot just pumping waves would be the pinnacle of surfing. That would really make it. So I'm with you in saying, thinking Trestles isn't the right pick, but...
Yep.
That's what they've picked and sort of we just got to go with it. It is a great fun wave to ride.
Yep.
And with no guys out like they've got it, if you go there for a free surf, there's 150 guys, it's a shithole.
Correct.
But with a couple of guys out, mate, it is actually not a bad little wave,
Yeah.
But it's only a high performance wave, not a heavy water wave, which... As surfers, we want to see a world title decided in 12 to 15 foot pipe.
Yeah.
Heaving, guys pushing it, go over the falls.
Agreed.
That's
the gladiator part of the sport.
I think that's where they will eventually go. They will sort of look. I think it's just a trial this year and see how the system works and see if it's what they want to run with in the future.
Yep, I agree.
They can, make it better and hopefully take it to Hawaii for the final. There, that would be sensational.
I agree. I think you're right. I can anticipate that's probably what will happen. I think everyone was a bit surprised that Trestles was the venue, probably just like you say, a bit to do with COVID and the fact that they decided to kick the year off in Hawaii. But, yeah, I think we'll see that probably reverse next year, hopefully. Assuming there's a tour, who knows what the future holds, eh?
Yeah, mate, it's up and down from hour to hour, day to day, hour to hour at the moment. What's going on around Australia and New South Wales, poor old Vico, they've been copping it over there, so heart goes out to all those Aussies over there. And we've been pretty lucky here in West, we've been pretty sheltered and, we've been able to surf every single day down here, even through lockdowns, we still go surfing and...
Yeah.
But the rest of the world's struggling, so I guess they've got to look after their athletes.
Yep.
The best they can, and it'd be some tough decisions at WSL at the moment.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd hate to be making them, so I think they're just doing their best for their athletes and trying to just get through the year, and crown a world champion.
Yeah, no, I agree, mate. No, good on you. Agree. One final question for you, mate. Cousin Flick, she's been a guest on the West Peak Sessions in the past. She's currently a contestant on Australian Survivor. What did you think about...
I did listen to her on your podcast. She did really well. She's beautiful, mate. She's my little cousin.
Yeah.
I think she even said, my wife, Sarah, and myself are like her second parents, which...
She did.
She is like our daughter, you know what I mean? She's my cousin, but... she's like having my own daughter, coming around here, and her daddy's Warwick, my cousin, and call out to Warwick out there, mate. Keep your chin up, brother. He's going through a few issues, but he's a tough man, so he'll pull through. So good on your Wazza, all the best, brother. And getting back to Flicky, she's beautiful, mate, and she's done so much for women surfing in Western Australia and the world. She's just such a charge. She got bigger gono, or I shouldn't say gono, bigger ovaries than anyone.
Bigger heart.
Yeah, there you go. Bigger heart. Yeah, yeah. She's gut she has, mate. I wouldn't go out and the stuff she goes. I'm a pussy these days. I'm scared. So she charges and she makes what, 99% of the blokes in the world look stupid when she goes out in big ways. So,
yeah.
She charges jaws, like some of those drops at jaws, you know, Piahi.
Yep.
Incredible, you know, like just to be out there paddling around in that ocean, it's, mate, the nerves and the anxiety and adrenaline pumping through your system would be incredible to try and put yourself in the spot for a 50-footer under, you know, you got to put yourself right in the death zone to catch a wave paddle in, you know what I mean? Those women and those men that are doing that, my God, you know, it takes serious courage.
You're right. And being able to keep your head kind of cool and in the right space while all of that's going on. And it'll be interesting to speak to her when she, you know, when we can, I suppose, about her survivor experience, because I think there's some real parallels there probably between being on a show like that and surfing big waves. What did you think about her brave decision to appear on that show?
Well, I think it's brave because personally, I've never watched the show. I've never really rated it at all. I think it's, but now that she's on it, I'm watching her and going for her. But yeah, it's sort of not my, doesn't blow my hair back. It's not my cup of tea. But you got to do what you got to do in these times. And, good luck to her. She's a tough girl. So she'll do really well. She'll pull through and, you know, keep watching because, big things could happen for her.
Yeah, I'm with you, mate. I'm watching it every episode and going for Flick, as you can imagine. Go, girl.
Yeah, go, Flicky. I love her. Love her dearly. She's beautiful. So all the best, Flick. Hopefully she nails it and takes them all down.
Bloody oath. That bloody oath. And, of course, she comes from a great family, Josh, and I mean that sincerely and extend that to you, mate. Thank you very much for being on the show today. Really enjoyed talking to you, legend.
It's been an honour, Brad. Thanks for having me on, mate. And, I'd love to have another chat. And
let's do that.
Go surfing in WA. Let's go.
I'm up for it, Joshy. Good man, mate. Thanks for your time.
Bye, brother.
Good on you, bud.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate. Bye, bye.
Bye, bye.
Just a reminder to our listeners: this episode is brought to you by South Coast Hemp Foods. We have a special offer for West Peak Session listeners today. Go to www.southcoasthemp.com.au and enter the code THERIGHT, one word, to receive 10% off your order. That's www.southcoasthemp.com.au and enter the code THERIGHT for 10% off. Thanks and see you next time.